is that we just look at what is the best that makes the most people the happiest. And because of that, that's what we know is morally right and wrong. Now, no question that a lot of moral things will make you happy if you follow them, but the basis of that is not happiness. The basis of morality is not what makes people feel good. And that was the point that Warren was driving at. And it's very important for us. And the Bible teaches about this very distinctly, especially in the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to look in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. We're going to talk about the idea of pleasure. And there are many different kinds of pleasure. And the reason that I wanted to discuss this is because this is about a worldview that, if we're not careful, will seep into our own hearts. And we need to be on guard against it. Just like the idea of materialism can seep in very easily, this mindset about the nature of reality and what it is that's truly important in life can sneak into our hearts, and we may not even realize that it's there. So we have to look at the evidence to see, is it actually there? And that is about pleasure. Now, we live in a hedonistic culture. There is no doubt about that. And a hedonistic culture simply is a culture where pleasure is the chief aim. That is, we have the most pleasure without harming other people. And in fact, we hear that a lot, don't we? Well, it doesn't matter. As long as they're not hurting anyone, it doesn't matter what they do. They can be, as long as they're happy, that's all that matters. And a big part of our culture says that very thing and follows that very thing. And sometimes it even gets into the church, and we got to be very careful with that, because the pleasure is not the chief aim. And that's what he's actually talking about in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. So let's read that, and then we'll go into a little bit more discussion of it in just a few minutes. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, how to lay hold on folly till I might see what it was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants. I had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hand had done and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. And we're going to see some things here in just a minute. But I want you to, in thinking about this, remember the chief pleasure, that the chief aim of many people is pleasure. Look over in Philippians chapter 3, and Paul talks about this there. That mindset has been around a very long time, and it's certainly not new for us. We haven't discovered anything. It's been around for thousands of years. Philippians chapter 3, verses 18 and 19. For many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you, even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who set their mind on earthly things. Now, having their God be their belly, that is indicative of someone who is consuming things because of the enjoyment. It's all about what I can enjoy. It's not just about food, although that certainly fits. It's the consumption, the attainment of pleasure in life. And it's a pitfall, and we have to be very careful of it. He was warning them about it back then as well. Look also in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 23. He says, speaking of the Jews and the Gentiles, the relationship that they had with the cross, he says, but we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, and to the Greeks foolishness. Now, when people are in a hedonistic culture, the idea of the cross of Christ is foolishness because it tells us, the cross tells us that there is a sacrifice that we must make. Hedonism, the pursuit of pleasure, says that I will pursue pleasure at any cost. It doesn't matter what happens, as long as I'm not hurting someone else, I'm not going to deny myself anything. And the idea of denying self is completely foreign and completely foolish, because why would you deny yourself something that's pleasure if pleasure is the end game, if that's what life is about? How could I actually do something that would take away pleasure from my life? I would be unhappy. And we think, well, we would never think that way, right? We don't. We try not to think that way, but it's very easy for us to slip into that mentality, so we're not careful. Now, I want to be clear. Pleasure is not inherently evil. I read a tract whenever I was first started preaching. I think I was a year or two into it. And I don't know where it came from. I just found it somewhere at a laundromat, I think. And I was reading through it. It said the evils of pleasure. And I thought, well, that would be interesting. And anything, this person was saying that any kind of entertainment, anything that you do where you actually have fun is wrong. Because in entertainment is enjoying the things of the world, and you should always be pious and you should never have any fun. You should never crack a joke. Have you ever met anyone that just never smiled? We had a man in preaching school who believed that it was sinful to laugh. He thought it was wrong to tell jokes. And so he would get on to us all the time, which made us joke even more. But he believed sincerely that it was wrong to have fun in life. So I want to be very clear up front. It's not wrong to have fun. And pleasure in and of itself is not wrong, but it's the pursuit of it that we have to be careful of. And we can get tripped up into very easily, just like with materialism. The material possessions are not evil in and of themselves, but the pursuit of them can harm us if we're not careful. So this is where we need to look. Look in Luke chapter 9 and verse 23, where the things that Jesus says that really contradict the ideas of pursuing pleasure. Well, Luke 9, 23. Then he said to them all, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me." Denial of self. Jesus says, if you want to follow him, denial of self is important. And then he says to take up your cross. And of course, the idea of taking up the cross is not, putting it on a necklace. And it's not actually literally putting a cross on your back and walking across the country, as I saw one man do. It is the idea of sacrificing yourself. They would take up their cross and carry it to the place where they're going to be crucified. And so we're giving up ourselves. We're giving up our desires. We're giving up our will. We're giving up what we want, and we're pursuing what God wants. And that is a challenge. It's a process. When we come out of that watery grave of baptism, we are a new creature, but there are a lot of things that we're still learning how to let go of, and still a lot of things that we're learning how to grab a hold of and pursue with our hearts. And the older we get, the more mature we get in Christ, the more we can have that kind of growth. But we need to be involved in the process for sure. Look at Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26. And here is some of the logic that Jesus uses. And this is one of the fundamental reasons or arguments against materialism or against the idea of hedonism and pleasure here. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26. "For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? For what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" You see, the cure for hedonism, the cure for the pursuit of pleasure, is to realize that this world is not our home, that there is something more to life than just this. If this is all we have, if this world is all that we have, there is nothing more to life than where we are right now. We're in trouble, first of all. And secondly, then we ought to just pursue pleasure. That would make the most sense. And the reason that people pursue pleasure because hedonism is because they think that this is all they've got. Eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow we die. And when we're dead, we're just dead. We're gone. And the more people that buy into atheism and atheistic teachings, the more they're going to pursue this and feel good about it. But Jesus calls us to something higher, and he tells us the reason for that is because our souls are far more important than anything in this world. And it doesn't matter at the end of the day, the end of time, when we're standing before God in judgment, nothing that we've done here as far as pleasures, the things of this world, nothing is going to matter. Only thing that matters is what we did that relates to God, how we grew closer to him, the relationship that we had with him, whether or not we obeyed God and kept his commandments. That is what's going to matter. So let's keep that in mind. Let's go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Look through here. There's three main ideas that he gives. And I think, you know, I was thinking through this. I thought, you know, it might be good for us to think about this related to our families. And I say this because of all the children we have here, but also because we're married, we have married couples. I want to apply this to us, our families, not just children, but that does include children, right? Ecclesiastes chapter 2, 1 through 11, we see that he has three things that he pursued. If you want to summarize them, the first one is wine, the first three verses. And especially verse 3, he says, I searched my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom. All right, so he is pursuing these things that were stimulating to him. And we also see here the works that he did, verses 4 through 6, that he did all kinds of things. Look at all the things that he made. I made my works great. I built myself houses, vineyards, gardens, orchards, all kinds of fruit trees, water pools. Everything you can imagine he could build, he built. And this was not, I mean, he didn't get out there himself and build these things himself. He had them built. And the reason for it was because of pleasure. He wanted to see the beauty. He wanted to make it a magnificent place so he can walk around in his gardens and see the things that were growing there. It was about the pleasures that he could find there. And then the last one was wealth, verses 7 and 8. Everything that he imagined. This man, Solomon, was at the time the richest man on earth. Maybe the richest man who has ever lived. And there's estimates of the just the things that the ships brought in that he sent people out to other parts of the world to find things and bring them back was millions of dollars every year just from the income that he got just from people finding stuff for him and bringing it back to him, not counting all the things that he had, all the treasures that he got from different nations and countries where he made deals with. He made huge amounts of profits. In fact, it said that King Solomon brought so many riches to Israel, to Jerusalem, that silver was so common that it was like stone. It was almost valueless because it was so much of it. That's a rich man. Anything that he wanted, he bought. You know, some people say that the rich have a lot of problems, and then sometimes we would respond, but I would like to have some of those problems for a day. But he had, his problem was what is worth living for? He didn't have anything to do. He was bored. He didn't have to go to a job. He was reigning. He was ruling as a king. I'm sure there was some work in there. But he's pursuing these things because he's trying to find out from what he's saying here, he's trying to find out what makes life worth living. And he comes to the end of these three things, the wine, the works, and the wealth. And he says at the end of verse, he says in verse 10, I want you to notice what he says. At the end of verse 10, it says, verse 10 says, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. My heart rejoiced in all my labor. So he's saying he was rejoicing. This is not something where he was walking through a depression. He had a great time. This was something that he was rejoicing his heart. You know, he got new stuff all the time. It was like, FedEx or, Amazon came every day for him, and he could really just enjoy everything, every part of life, anything that he wanted. He's constantly getting himself gifts and buying things for other people. He was enjoying himself, but then he says in verse 11, and I looked on all the works that my hands had done and on the labor which I had toiled, and indeed it was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. At the end of the day, it didn't actually do anything for him. As happy as he was, it was meaningless. And this is where wisdom can really make us have pain in life. Because we kind of know, and it's good for us to know, but we know that it's not really worth it. We put in all this effort and time and to enjoy life, and then it always goes awry. It never lasts. The things that we we get for ourselves. It always fades away. There's always problems with it. There's difficulties after difficulties if we try to live for pleasure. That's what he's saying. It's not worth it. Let's think about it with our families. We think about wine. It was more than that, but I'm thinking about external stimulations. And oh man, this is a big one for us, right? We have a culture that is full of videos, and games, and entertainment, and screen time. None of those are inherently wrong. But you know, the number of hours that people watch videos and online, and they're glued to their television sets, or they're glued to their computers, on the internet, sometimes doing bad things, but even doing good things. The numbers are getting bigger and bigger. The amount of time that we spend, that we waste, doing things that are quote-unquote fun, and I would dare say that a lot of that is not fun. We spend a lot of time doing those kinds of things, and our children spend a lot of time, and the numbers are not getting better, they're getting worse. So we're finding all kinds of things. You know, there are new diagnoses. There's a new kind of diagnosis for the neck that relates to one particular spot, and I've had it. I got actually mine from Brown Trail when I had my head down studying into books. But now and then, I look at my phone, and I can tell, and I've been on too much, because there's a pain that comes right at one particular spot. And that is something that they've diagnosed that is a condition that has cropped up into Americans. That is a part of the – they call that screen pain, basically, because you're looking at your phone too much, and you're having pain in the neck. That's basically all it is. So you have to go get adjusted, a chiropractor. You have all kinds of things that come up. There's another one that with the thumbs – people are having problems with their thumbs because they're texting so much. And I mean, kids early on are having problems with their joints and stuff in their thumbs because they're texting so much. And some of them are really good at it, by the way. I substitute taught one time, and there was a kid that was texting, talking to me. We were having a conversation, and she was under her desk texting people. How do you do that? Lots of practice. But we have this, and it's external stimulation. And what does it do? It's worthless, but it's addicting too, isn't it? And people find themselves more and more. And there's nothing wrong with turning on a video and letting children watch, or even yourself, relaxing at the end of the day. But we got to ask some questions. Really, how much is enough? And that's something that we don't do well as Americans, and maybe the world doesn't do well. Those external stimulations, there's a whole lot more that we could say about the kinds of stimulations, but even just keeping it to the things that we do that are not inherently evil, the good things, the things that we enjoy that are wholesome even, we can spend way too much time with it. Another one here is the works, activities and accomplishments. And this is one that it's been a problem for a long time with children, and it's getting worse in our culture. You know, I was talking to someone yesterday who had signed up paid thousands of dollars for their child to be involved in some kind of a sport. And when they signed up, they were put on a team, and they said they were not going to be gone on Sundays, but then they moved the person to a new team. And every time they play is on a Sunday. When I was growing up, that would have never been, we would never even considered playing on Sunday. There's no way that would happen. But now they do. And so it's getting worse and worse. And we put our kids into situations, sometimes wholesome activities, but they're taking us away from God. They're doing things that are inappropriate sometimes. There's sometimes some of the way that they dress. There's all kinds of problems that we can get into that we don't think about. And so we want to make sure that our children have the best of grades. So we'll make sure that our children will study every single night to make sure that they're caught up at school, because we want more than anything for them to go to college or whatever it is they're going to do when they get out of school so they can have the best life possible. And then, of course, we have the sports. And it doesn't matter because, you know, we kind of justify it. Well, you know, my child is going to be, he's going to be in the NFL. So, of course, he's going to have to miss church because that's more important. He's going to have a life. You know, the odds of them actually making it big is a lot smaller than the odds of them meeting Jesus one day, because they will meet Jesus one day. they probably won't be a pro. Popularity is another one. We've all seen it. We've seen parents do weird things to make sure their kids stay popular. Sometimes bad things to make sure their kids are popular. We need to be careful of that. What are we saying? Not only that, but consider ourselves as parents. What is it that's really important? Our accomplishments, and you think about your accomplishments at work, accomplishments, you know, all the things that you do, are those things really important? You get some medals, you get some attaboys, you get some, you know, some accolades. At the end of the day, those things are not important. But we are fooled into thinking they are. Then the other one was wealth, putting on the show. We got to have all the gadgets. We got to have, you know. I'm going to offend some people with this one. Your children, if they're living with you and you're making them get a job so that they can pay you rent and they have to work on Sunday because of that, shame on you. When your children are at home, they don't have to work. It's not a requirement that they go get out and get a job. You're taking care of them. You should be taking care of them. So whenever you force them to go get a job, which I heartily recommend, get them out working as quickly as possible. But do not make the mistake of telling them it's okay if you have to work Sundays. Because what are you doing? You're saying, even though they have the option, they don't have to have that job. Church is not important enough to overcome the money issue. And so I'm going to go get a job where I have to work Sundays. I actually have a job where I work Sundays. But I don't have to have a job. Let's say I'm living at home. I don't have to have a job. I just want one. I want to be able to pay for a car. I want to be able to buy me an Apple computer, watch, and all kinds of things. In order to do that, I got to have a job. And so, you know, rightly so, my parents can teach me that you need to go out and earn the income, and I'm going to go out and get a job, and I have to work Sundays, and I can't ever be at church. But this is more important. Is it really? It's not. And when you as parents allow them to do that, you're teaching them that it's okay for them to miss church because of money. Now, when they get out on their own and there are situations where they can't help it, I'm not going to get in a judgment of everyone who has to miss because they have to eat. Sooner or later, though, you've got to make some decisions. If you have a position, and I've thought this my entire life, if you have a job that's keeping you away from God, how long should it take for you to try to find a new job? Am I going to continue for the rest of my life working so I can't ever go spend time with God? I can't ever spend time with the family of God? I can't spend time in worship to my God because I have to eat? Aren't there other things that we can do? It's like the man I told you about before that was a bartender. He was baptized, and so the preacher was talking to him, and he's like, well, okay, when are you going to get a new job? When are you going to get a new job? He said, I'm not. He said, why not? He says, I can't do anything else. And the preacher said, well, why do you still have that job? And the man said, I've got to eat, don't I? That preacher's response was, no, you don't. You know, when we are convicted, when we believe that this world is not our home, when we believe that there's something far more important, and we're convicted of that, we're convinced that it doesn't matter what we go through in this life, we're going to have a home in heaven. That changes the way we make decisions, doesn't it? Now, there are situations and emergencies. There are things that come up that we can't help. I realize that. But we ought to be trying our best to avoid those kinds of situations, not willingly walking into them and pretending that it's okay, because you know what? It's not. And we might get to the day of judgment, and God may look at us and say, you know what? You did the best thing. You missed church, but you didn't have any choice. Let's suppose that that's what God says. You didn't have any choice, and so it's okay that you missed. He may let you in. I hope that's the case. But you know what? You still miss all those services. You still missed all that fellowship. You still missed all that growth that could have come for you when you or by attending the services. You missed all those times of opportunities for you to help encourage other people who are also struggling through life and trying to make the best of decisions. You missed all kinds of opportunities for growth. And we kind of fool ourselves into thinking, well, if I have a job and I have to work on Sundays and I have to be away from God and be away from the church in that sense, and I can't worship, then it's okay. But it doesn't bother me. But it does bother you. It will affect you. And any of us who think that we can be away from God for any amount of a large amount of time and think that it doesn't affect us, we're fooling ourselves. It doesn't work that way. We are meeting together weekly because this is what we need. God knows what we need. And we have a lot of opportunities to do that. But when pleasures and wealth and gadgets and jobs and the material things are more important than my relationship with God, I'm in trouble. My spirituality is hindered, and I'm pursuing something that really is, as Solomon said, vain, worthless. At the end of time, it doesn't matter how much stuff you have. It's all going to burn up anyway. What is important is where you are with relationship with God. So we need to remember that the ultimate good is not happiness. The ultimate good is God. That's why Jesus said when he was asked what the greatest commandment was, in Mark chapter 12, he said, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. There is nothing greater than that. There is no idea greater than that. There's no pursuit greater than that. Everything in life revolves around that idea of my life is in dedication to God. That's what Jesus meant when he said, take up the cross daily and follow me. Take up the cross. You deny yourself and you live for God. Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, Paul said, I've been crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. We have to decide what is important to us in life. When we get to that judgment day, what is going to be revealed? What is going to be revealed is what we really pursued. What we really thought was important is the vanity and the pleasure of this world. That important, or is God that important? We can only make that decision ourselves. Nobody can make it for us. So you have to make that decision yourself. Am I gonna participate and do what God wants me to do, or am I just gonna pretend that I'm a Christian and then I'm gonna do whatever I want to do anyway? There's two differences, right? So that may sound harsh, but that's just reality, and I don't know any other way of looking at it. We either do what God said or we don't. We either decide we're going to follow him or we decide we're not. And there is no riding the fence. You can't do both. You got to pick one. And I hope we make the right decision. So what is it that we're teaching our children? By the way, we have. By graduation, this is an interesting idea, thought. If you add up the number of hours that are spent from a child as a baby to the time that they graduate high school, if you add up the hours that is spent in Bible class, usually it's 2 a week, if they go to all the Bible classes, by the time they graduate high school, they'll have the equivalent amount of hours as a second grade student in school. That's how much education they've had, second grade. I wonder how many times people have gone through, they participated in everything the church does. I'm not getting it at home. But they've gotten all the education that we can get from the church, and those kids go off to school, and they fall away. How many times have people blamed the church? How many times have they actually sit down with their children and teach them? Or what did their actions and decisions teach them? Because they do teach. You know, your actions teach far more. Your decisions teach far more than anything you can say out of your mouth. And they see, and they will follow. So we got to be careful. Are you pursuing pleasures? Is that what life is about for you? Or are you pursuing God? Now, there are great pleasures in being a Christian. There are great joys that are there. In fact, the fruit of the Spirit the three main components of the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace. Those things are part of Christianity, but you don't get those by pursuing the things of the world. You get those by pursuing the spiritual growth that comes by what the Holy Spirit taught us in this word. So let's be a part of that.